Welcome back to Mike and Maurice's Mind Escape. Let us help you escape your mind.
Folks, welcome back to Mike and Maurice's Mind Escape. We have episode number, 287. Wow. We're getting up there. We're going to have to do something for 300, something special. I don't know. We're going to have to think of something for that. We do have a special show tonight. I am joined by guest, author, and psychonaut Adam Butler, who wrote the book Butler's DMT Field Guide, which is available on Amazon and other outlets. You can check the link down below if you want to check that book out. Highly recommend it. Read it. Just finished it. Thoroughly enjoyed it, and we will get into that here in a few minutes. before we get started, if you want to support Mind Escape, the easiest way to do it is to click the Linktree link down below. We've got a merch store with a lot of cool merch, whether it's sweatshirts, mugs, art, things like that. And if you are listening on an audio platform, please check out our YouTube channel. We do all of our shows live on YouTube, and then they get uploaded to all the audio platforms after. We do have video episodes on Spotify too. If you want to leave us a nice review on Apple or Spotify, we'd really appreciate it. And please check out our documentary, As Within, So Without, From UFOs to DMT. It is available on our YouTube channel. And there is a director's cut, which is a little bit longer, that is available on our Patreon page as well, for $7.77, which also you gain access to all of our exclusive content. So one more thing. I'm going to give a shout out to all my top glass artist people out there, my heady artists. Check out Glass by Aaron Carte, C-A-R-T-E-E, on Etsy. Please check out Sales Jody, S-A-Y-L-E-S-J-O-D-I. Gross Glass, G-R-O-S-S, Glass. Jappy Glass, J-A-P-P-E, Glass. Oakwood Hot Works, my boy Ambient _ Glass on Insta. I don't know if I have a picture. Maybe I'll pull up a picture next time, but this sick metal artist, that goes by Marley Machine Works on Instagram, made me these titanium dabbers that are hockey sticks, and they're phenomenal. They're Red Winged themed. I'm a huge Detroit Red Wings fan. They're Red Winged themed titanium dabbers. So dude's killing it. Check out Marley Machine Works. Thank you so much. And I just received a sick glass marble from my boy Andrew Tischler at Andrew Tischler Glass on Instagram. Check him out. He's doing some really, really heady fractal artwork here on these marbles. And then if you're into the topic we're talking about tonight and you're looking for that spirit apparatus, check out the dude, the Dream Lamp, is all one word, the Dream Lamp, for your molecule necessities. So, all right, without further ado, welcome on the show, Adam. How are you doing?
I'm very good. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Let's throw the generic one out there first. Why don't you give us a little bit of your background and like kind of how you got into this? Obviously, we'll get into your book, which does describe a little bit of that as well. But just give us a brief overview of your relationship with maybe psychedelics before the events that occur in your book. And then, we'll kind of jump into the book.
That's probably the best way to describe it, is my life kind of before and after DMT. Two completely different stories, really. At 40 years old, I guess I kind of had the proverbial midlife crisis, and it was a series of horrible relationship mess ups, me realizing I was an alcoholic and realizing I needed to kick alcohol. I went through several career changes, and I preface that with, I really lived with a silver spoon growing up. I had every advantage. I had great parents, great teachers, great mentors. I had every advantage in the world. So not to say that I didn't really have some real life experiences, but I never had major trauma until I was around 40 years old. And when all of that happened, initially I turned to mushrooms. So, and I can, I mean, I guess I can get into the details of what all that happened, but I don't necessarily think the details matter. And that's something that we'll get to when we talk about how DMT can potentially help people, is that it really is super subjective, and it'll help everybody kind of find out exactly what their issue is. And then I'm sure by the time we get up to my age, everybody's had a list of things that have, you know, caused some scars on them. But initially I started with mushrooms. You know, I had done some stuff in high school and college. I did LSD maybe 4 or 5 times. I did shrooms a couple times, but then had like a 20-year hiatus until recently, like I said, around 40. And I had, you know, some 3, 4, 5 gram sessions. Then I went a little bit deeper. I did 6, 7, you know, maybe even 8 gram sessions. And I started becoming really comfortable in that psychedelic space. And we were kind of touching on this before the show started. About a lot of people's story with DMT is that it kind of finds them and it calls them, and you kind of know when it's not time to do it, and then you kind of know when it's time to do it. So I had a friend that knew kind of the struggles that I was going through, knew that I was trying to kind of address it with psychedelics, and offered me DMT. And I didn't touch it for probably 4 or 5 months, just because I knew, not that I was prepping myself, but I felt as though from what I had. So let me also stop. That's in that time frame. That's when I did as much research as I could. You know, so you do all the Joe Rogan podcast, and you read the Strassman books, and you get into kind of the basics of what's out there. And I realized that this probably could help change my life. So by the time I actually was ready for that day to do it, I had done quite a bit of prep work, and I felt as though that I was mentally ready. And I was at the point in my life that I had no other alternative. I was suicidal. You know, it had really gotten to that point. So yeah, I mean, ultimately that's how I got into psychedelics. And then the differentiating factor with DMT was the complete restructuring of my physiology, the complete breakdown of how I used to live, and the increased empathy, I guess, for humankind. And then really that's kind of how the book came out, was I think the mental health aspect of it is huge. And that's what I kind of wanted to share my story, was if I can share my rawness, and in the book really explicitly go over just how fucked up I was and how bad it really got. And there are a lot of people out there in these really dark places, and they've tried everything, and it's not alcohol and it's not prescription drugs that are going to help them out of it. And I think psychedelics offer another path. And, you know, obviously I'm not the only one that thinks that, hence all
they've helped me tremendously. So like I'm right there with you, man. And I appreciate you speaking out and telling your story too, because I know it sounds cliche, but the more people that share their experiences and share their stories, takes more of the stigma and less of the, you know, like negative feelings towards it, I guess, the idea of that. So I think that's huge, and it's important, and we're starting to see that kind of, you know, lift. It's a combination of that and also the conventional stuff just not working, and we're having a major crisis out there. So I think it's a combination of those two things. But I think, like I said, I appreciate you sharing your story and everything. The crazy thing that struck me was, here, let me, I made a couple notes when I was reading your book, but there was, I think you were talking about the first time you did it with your buddy, you said you did it, what, like 40 or 50 hits that day, correct? Is that am I remembering that correct?
Yeah. And I describe that in the book because I know some people try to say bullshit, right? You know, you hear that kind of the Terrence McKenna line, right? So you take 2 hits, then you have to take your third and maybe even your fourth if you can. And I agree with that. And I had those types of sessions, but I didn't get the answer that I was really looking for. So I guess really to set that up. So once again, I had access to DMT. I had access to a safe place to do it. I had access to somebody that would be there with me to protect me, really, to you know, shroud me in love and allow me to that space. So the first hit that I took, it instantly blew your mind. And the first thing that I noticed was just a sense of familiarity, excuse me, that the taste, the smell, as much as it blew all your sensations away, it really was something that you had experienced before. And I instantly felt, okay, this is extreme, but it's very comfortable. So that, you know, that first time I took three or four hits, saw the crazy lights and the patterns and you know, really that this mind-blowing psychedelic experience. But I was there, like I said, in a really dark place. I wasn't there for the sights and the sounds. I wasn't there for some show. You know, I really was looking for the reset in my life. So, you know, all right, and the good thing about DMT too is that it only takes, you know, 7-8 minutes and then you're kind of back to being lucid. So, all right, process that. But I didn't get the answers. So then I took another, you know, the second session was 4, 5, 6 hits, you know, a little bit deeper. Once again, a mind-blowing experience, but I didn't get that. I didn't see entities. I didn't talk to spirits. I didn't get any information. You know, it really was just this intense psychedelic experience. So another fourth time, fifth time, sixth time. And each one of these sessions are, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 hits as much as I could. And we were using a vape pen. So, you know, if you tried to do that with a bong or a bowl with a lighter, probably wouldn't be able to, because you really,
was it a cartridge or was it like one of the combustible ones?
So that first time, I think that it was like a green ooze setup. So it kind of had like a bowl that you put it in and then like a glass kind of sheath around it. It worked perfectly. But all you had to do was hit a button and put it up to your mouth. Once again, if you had to logistically light a lighter and do all that, you probably couldn't take 6-7 hits. But that seventh kind of round, so now it's an hour plus into it, and my mind was, you know, pretty well, not fried, but I'd seen quite a bit in that hour span. But like I said, I didn't get that epiphany moment. I didn't get that breakdown. I didn't get that, oh, well, this is great. Now I can walk out of here and my life has changed. But that's where that last session was completely different. So I took 7, 8, I mean, massive hits as much as I could. And kind of it was, listen, I've got to do this. What's the alternative? Literally, it was go out and kill yourself. So it's either do this as best you can or go out and figure out a way to end it. And that's when, like, so all of the crazy sights and sounds, the humming, all of that intense, sensational, you know, aspects that typically have with a DMT session, it all stopped completely and everything became completely still, completely numb. And then that's when I received my kind of, I guess, that first breakthrough through session. And I had information conveyed to me that, I don't want to say answered all my questions, but it gave me what I needed. And I literally, when I came out of it, I was just this crumpled mess on my friend's floor, crying, just huge tears of gratitude. And I write that in the book about just not sadness, I wasn't scared. I was so happy that I didn't have to go through that rabbit hole of asking those questions again. And really to kind of, I guess, without all the details, it was the way my brain works is I have all these, you know, tangential thoughts and I'm trying to connect all the dots in my life. And I'm constantly spiraling on all these trying to connections to make. And it was like, all right, so, you know, kind of this laughing, like stupid human, all right, you want to connect these dots. All right, here's your 1,000 dots connected. And then those got connected. And then here's 1,000,000 more dots. All right. Well, then now those are all connected in a snap. Well, now here's 1,000,000,000,000 dots. And it kept going to this like infinite number of dots where it was just like, listen, the plan isn't, or the idea isn't to connect all these dots and to try to have all the answers. It's really to experience the dots and to weave in between the dots and to pull the information from the dots. And it just completely changed my entire perspective of life, how I interact with people, how I absorb information, how I project my energy into the world. Because I didn't need to keep, I basically was wasting so much valuable energy on burning out my brain and my body, trying to answer these questions that I didn't need to have answered. And so that was that, when I came away from that, that was the like, oh shit, this is now that didn't make all my problems go away. I mean, I still had all of the pile of crap that I needed to work myself out of, but now I didn't have to keep banging my head against the same wall. At least now I could start digging away at that pile and start working on it. And then, yeah, so that was like a year and a half ago. I quit my job. I threatened to kill somebody. We were talking about this too, about people being dishonest and deceitful. I had lost everything. So I took a year off, and luckily I was in a financial situation where, I had some saved up reserves, and I took a year off and just traveled the country. So I went to, I think, like 38 states, 265 new cities. I went to all these national parks. I lived in Northern California on the beach for like 3 weeks.
Stop by here in Michigan?
Lake Erie, but I don't think I went through Michigan.
Oh, dude, you gotta come to Michigan, bro.
Well, so that I'd love to. So I have like those, 10 states left that I plan on going through. But I took that time to really just say, I'm getting out of the rat race. It's not about money. It's not about houses. It's not about things. It's not about cars. It's about yourself. So, I went on the road with a lot of DMT, a lot of shrooms, and went to some of the most beautiful places in the world and just contemplated life.
Sounds like a sick, sick music tour, except without the music.
Well, the messed up
Make
thing
your own
is,
music.
I've been reading books on these types of topics for probably, 25 years. And as a young guy in his 20s, you read these books about these people in their 40s. Well, they took a year off sabbatical and they traveled. And it's like, yeah, that must be nice. And I never thought that it would happen because of absolute destruction. It sounds like it's this beautiful story, but it's because every foundational thing in my life absolutely blew up. I mean, I lost everything from houses to relationships to money to integrity to. But now I can say it's the best thing that's ever happened to me. Like
No, I
it's.
mean, hey man, that's the, it sounds like, it sounds like you're a, a wise seasoned pro. You said it's only been a year. I mean, you can put a lot of work in. You can do a lot of stuff in a year. Changes too. I mean, people say, "Oh, you need to, yeah, you can, I believe you can change. I've changed. I've changed through doing this podcast. The, you know, when you when you're honest with yourself, like truly honest with yourself, you can do some amazing things because you're aware of biases and the way you're talking and treating other people, and you can just really tweak a lot of things. So I don't really subscribe to the, oh, people don't change. It's maybe dumb people don't change that don't give a shit. Maybe that's the case. I don't know, but
Well, I think you hit on it when you're being honest with yourself, and that's I think the beauty of psychedelics. I went to therapy before, but I just tried to mind fuck the therapist. It was just like, all right, I'm going to show him that I'm intellectually superior. I'm going to make him think I'm what like and obviously that's not very self-serving. It was, but like you can't fool yourself when you're doing these psychedelics. And when you it's laughable when you try to like. Your ego tries to take over, and I guess that's the beauty of it too, is that there's no fooling yourself. It's like if you're on truth serum with the universal intelligence or source or whatever you want to call it, but you're tapped in. And
Yeah, there's this one scene from our documentary where this guy Jack, his name's Jack Napier, he runs the Trip Whip channel on YouTube, and he does like a lot of trip report stuff. But he's talking about one of his biggest like breakthroughs. The information he got was like, this: we're all in like this like play. We're all pretending. We're all like compromising what we truly think and believe to appease the people around us. We're not truly ourselves. Like we're always putting on these masks and always altering what we say and are gonna say and that kind of a thing. Do you ever, do you ever think about that in terms of, have you ever had anything associated with that, like an experience or anything?
Well, I used to, like I said, it completely changes how you interact with people in general. So, yeah, I guess when you psychedelics allow you to truly love yourself and look at yourself in an honest way, and I think that allows you to project loving and looking at other people honestly. I don't know. If that kind of answers your question like that, but
Yeah, no, yeah.
it forces you to know that you're part of this greater whole, and the empathy that you have for other people really translates into everything that you do. I think that the simplest way for me to summarize it, and as much as I try to write eloquently and use all these big words to describe these events, really what happened was I found contentment. And at 40 something years old, to really not experience full contentment in what that means. It just, that allows you to live your life in a better way. And then, you know, I think you pointed out on one of your other podcasts about how the cool thing now is science is kind of backing up like what's happening in some of these psychedelic spaces. So, you know, like the physiology of your body does change when you're meditating and you're content and you're happy, you know, and if you're walking around in these stress states where you're in this fight or flight mode and your body's constantly like humming at this protective vibration, as opposed to this calm, loving vibration. Once you make that change and that shift, it affects everything. You know, like I said, not to say that all your problems go away, but how you approach those problems and how you approach other people and how you interact with other people just completely changes.
Absolutely. That's like one of the biggest misconceptions too, is that just by taking these things, you become enlightened or a better person or somehow elite or something like that. And you see that. You see that online. I remember, not as much anymore, but like some of the Facebook forums a few years ago, it's just some of the worst shit talking like on the psychedelic forum. Like, these are other people that are into these substances that are trying to like make themselves better, supposedly. And then you have all these other like, some of them will say that they're like tricksters or that's their thing or whatever, but it's just like, really? I don't know. I don't understand that. And I hate that shit too. But I don't know how you feel about that, but it just seems like, well, I've encountered people like, I don't think you have to have, I don't know how I want to say this. I think you have to have some sort of like moral scaffolding or some sort of base of who you are and an understanding of who you are and what you're trying to do with these things. Because if you're just an asshole and you start taking these things, it's just going to amplify that asshole in you, kind of a thing, you know? So I think that that's the biggest problem I see within the psychedelic community.
No, I agree. And I've been asked that before too, you know, it's like DMT being used for nefarious reasons by the elite class to control, like, you know, could it? Yeah. Like you said, if you're some narcissistic, controlling, manipulative jerk, and then you take DMT, it's going to escalate all of those attributes. Hopefully, maybe to a point though, like at some point, like I said, that smugness and that cockiness and that self-centeredness hopefully will get washed away. You know, and I made a comment about that in the book about how, like, you wish some politicians, like if every politician did like a nice ayahuasca session and came out of it, like you just realize that, yes, obviously there can be differing opinions and there can be different solutions to problems, but it's not red team, blue team. It's not us against them. It's kind of like, what are we doing fighting and wasting all this time and energy on that? And I think that sense of empathy really comes through. Like I said, your guest, that Trent, I believe we mentioned him before, about how it comes back to love and connection, it seems. And it seems like that seems to be that common thread. So you'd like to think maybe at some point the mean people would use it and then switch over. But I mean, there's always going to be assholes.
I mean, who knows what's going on? It's the internet. It could be trolls. Could be people not even doing it. You know, I don't really, who knows what the hell is going on? I mean, in real life, I haven't met that many assholes from like fish shows, jam shows, dead shows, stuff like that. I haven't really encountered too many. I mean, they exist for sure, but you know, even some of those people, they've got other problems going on too. So, so back to your book though. So your book's called Butler's DMT Field Guide. And that, I think that's a good title, because I do think it is a good field guide or a good starting point. Like I said, I've never done this. So, in terms of DMT, I've done most of the other psychedelics and plenty of psilocybin in my day. But, so I read it as, this is like a good, if you don't know anything about it or whatever, this is what you want to look at. In fact, chapter one, the first chapter is called Who the Fuck Am I, which I thought was pretty funny. It's a good, again, a great starting point for anybody who's about to take some sort of, you know, spiritual quest or knowledge quest or something. Like, that's the first thing you want to say, you know, you want to ask yourself is, who am I, you know?
And, or if you're in a suicidal depressed state, you know, I hate to say like that too, but I mean, if you're looking up at the sky saying, who the fuck am I? You know, typically you're at a point where you're asking that question for a reason, you know? So it kind of was a twofold, who am I as an author to, you know, who the hell am I to write a book about DMT? What gives me the authority? But it really was that existential question that we kind of all ask, which is who the fuck am I? And it's way more than just somebody that makes money and tries to get things. But yeah, and you mentioned that the title field guide and kind of the how it's a nice, easy introduction. And I wrote it as such. I didn't want to have some thick scientific book of 400, 500, 600 pages. I didn't want to have to write references. I guess I'm comfortable doing that if I needed, but I wanted it to be something that you read on a weekend and kind of makes you ask other questions. So like there are incredibly talented and intelligent scientific minds that have spent 20, 30, 40 years working on DMT. Like they are the scientific authorities. I'm somebody that what I found, I think my biggest maybe value is that a lot of people are very uncomfortable talking about any mistakes that they made, talking about their rawness, talking about suicidal anxiety, depression. Like these aren't things that typically people are comfortable talking about. And I found that as soon as I open up my stories, people just feel instantly okay to then talk about theirs. And then that leads to the discussion about, all right, so what can we do to help? Like, how do you address that darkness in your life? How do you remove that plaque that's been building up? And I think that's been the beauty of my experience with this book so far is hearing the other stories of people and knowing that it works. Like just story after story after story of, yes, this can help. You know, I mean, you're another one. We just heard your story. You know, it's like, all right, cool. Shrooms help save your life. That's something that needs to be, you know.
Save your life. But like, No. I try not to, because I've said it so much, like the story's been told so many times. And I always dog on Joe Rogan for repeating the same talking points on things. So I try not to do that myself. But yeah, I mean, anybody can go back and watch any of our episodes, especially the Trip Report ones. We talk about all that. So chapter two, DMT, the miracle molecule. And you talk about like Rick Strassman and kind of like the history and one thing I wanted to ask you about, I don't really know too much about this guy. I've heard other people mention him, is this Joe Dispenza guy. Mm-hmm. I've heard people kind of attach him to some sort of woo hoaxy stuff. And I've heard other people say, no, he's legit. Like what's your take on that?
I think just the opposite of woo hoaxy shit. So I think his main book is called Becoming Supernatural. So he's my understanding is that, you know, he's a medically trained doctor who basically is using like electric and magnetic scans to prove what's happening during these elated states. So, you know, what happens during meditation? What happens when you have a room full of people that are focusing their energy on one thing? Like, can you actually change the vibration in the room? And it's, the answer is yes. And he's, you know, he's proving it. But one of the things he was kind of big into too is studying like the chemicals of what happens when you're in different brain states and what happens when, you know, his kind of whole thing is brain and heart coherence. So if your heart and your brain are working together, your body's producing the chemicals that it needs properly. And one of those chemicals is DMT, you know, so, and you bring it up all the time about it, the endogenous qualities of DMT. And that's massive in so many different ways. I think that's why it feels so familiar. I think that's why you can metabolize it so quickly and so naturally. But that, you know, that's one of the main reasons why Rick Strassman was studying it. But the fact that you can, through breathing and meditation and quieting your mind, get your body to make these chemicals, it's awesome. So it takes the woo-woo out of it. Yeah. It takes the meditative monk that's up in the mountaintop being like, oh yeah, he's enlightened and he's floating. Yeah, because he's tripping on DMT, right, that he made in his own body.
There's this guy, I forget, it's like a clip on YouTube, but he's talking about how if you sit for 2 weeks in complete darkness, you will start to produce DMT and get into a super, like, you know, hallucinogenic state. So I don't know if, you know, there's anything to that. I think the guy's name was like Montauk. I don't know. He was a Asian guy, I believe, but he was talking about like Eastern medicine, kind of like what you're talking about. Just these people that have been considered, you know, like, again, just like Eastern medicine, or maybe not as legit biology or whatever, but they're still out there you know, helping people. And, you know, he was talking about all the different like things associated with that. And he did talk about that. So like, I don't know if that's true. I know people do these darkness retreats, but I don't know if that's what's going on or if it's something different. There's other myths and tales of ancient times of people retreating into a complete dark cave and coming out ascended masters and stuff like that. So I find that very interesting. Like you said, the kind of like the Wim Hof style breathing stuff and all that. Very cool. Yeah, somebody put Montauk Chia. That's who it was. Thank you, MVP or MPV. You are the MVP, though. MPV. So those are definitely interesting. Like, how can we induce these states without having to either synthesize or, you know, ravage a toad or, you know, whatever the case may be. So,
I
got another question. Sorry, go ahead. But and then we'll hit the.
Well, I was going to say I can attest to the breathing and meditating. I've been big into meditating for years and years prior to this. So I've kind of been able to quiet my mind for a while, even though it was driving me crazy. But the first time that I kind of did the breathing exercises to say, all right, you know, let me try this. I was amazed at how, so I would say 100% you can produce your own DMT. I mean, I've tripped my balls off on just sitting there and make, you know, trying to make that a reality. And you taste it in the back of like your nasal cavity, and you can taste it in the back of your throat. And you certainly feel it. And you know, I think there's other times when you feel it as well. Like I have a chapter talking about transcendental sex and how, you know, psychedelics can be used in the bedroom. And so that's something that I work in quite a bit. And there are times when there is no DMT in the room, and we haven't done DMT for weeks even. And at that right moment, whether it be because of breathing or because of the right movement of fluids or whatever it may be, like you really can produce DMT, in my opinion, during intercourse as well. And like I said, maybe that's more with the breathing and the air movement, but
it's
amazing how much you smell
tasting.
And tasting.
So, I've heard some people say that it smells like plastic. Some people say it tastes like plastic. Some people say it smells like flowers. Some people say it tastes like flowers. What's going on there? What's your interpretation of it? Does obviously you're saying that's got a very specific taste, you know?
Yeah. Oh, it's and you know,
I'm sure it's probably
it,
like the drip
everywhere.
I'm sure it's probably like the drip with like Coke, where it's like, oh man, the drip. You know?
It's so, everywhere.
Yeah.
Well, I've never done that, but it's very just natural, organic. I don't get the synthetic like plastic smell. I think it's very natural.
Like Wild said, Man Ninja just said it smells like mothballs.
It's you do smell it everywhere. And I don't know if it's like a maybe like the methyl group or something like that, but I feel like I smell it where there's cleaning products all the
and
time.
Do,
so like
do you think though
like a bathroom and you're like, oh shit, there's DMT.
Do you think that though, because you've done it enough that you've maybe induced it, almost like how somebody that uses cannabis regularly can't smell, like if somebody said that smells like, unless it's like super strong, because I use cannabis, I have a tough time being like, oh, like, you know, on that level. So do you think it's something similar to that, or do you think it's completely different since it's produced in our bodies?
No, you pick it up. I mean, I feel like you become hypersensitive to the smell and taste of it. Like I said, because now that, like, I try to produce it as much as I can. So if you know you have that supply in your own body, you know, how great to get a DMT bump when you're at the gym, how great when you're going for a hike, how great when you're meditating by the beach, you know? So it's kind of like anything, it's practice. So if you practice your body to get to that point, it's super. And you know, I fully believe you can get the same benefits of mental health help, I guess, that I got without doing psychedelics. Like you can get to that same state through meditation, through prayer, through quieting your mind, through exercise. You know, it's just psychedelics allow a kind of quick jump to it. But once you're able to get to that space of how to change your mind and thinking, it's pretty easy to get back to.
Yeah, I think that's like that's like the goal of a lot of people within the psychedelic community is like, how can I achieve that state without actually taking these substances? Or that's like the, and I don't know. I'm not saying that I don't feel that way. I'm just saying that, like, I don't know if that's true for me for in the past, because there's something to be said about like the ritual of it. Like, not so much anymore because I'm older, I've got other responsibilities. But when I was younger and I knew I was gonna like eat a bunch of mushrooms later, I got like all excited, and there's like a ritual associated with it, and I've got my favorite pipe and how I'm gonna do it and everything set up, and there's just like a whole procedure that I enjoyed that like leads up into the actual event. So it's not just, I don't think it's just the actual compounds interacting. It's like the lead up to it. It's like the whole, it's everything. It's the lead up. It's the come down. It's all the components of it, in my opinion.
Well, it's the set and setting, right? So it's the environment and the intention. And I think that's huge. So if the intent is to go to a rave and a party and to jam out, and that's not a bad thing, then cool. Like, you know, it can make you have a great night. I think that's kind of the beauty of what's happening now, though, is a lot of people are using this with the right intention. So like every time that I've done DMT, and I've done it hundreds of times, it's always with reverence. It's always with respect. I always kind of pray and meditate beforehand and kind of come up with what my intention is. So is it, I'm going to give gratitude. Am I looking for some sort of answer? I mean, it's never easy, but I think that's the beauty. If the intent is, all right, I need to figure out what's going on in my life. It's a great way to do it. You know, as opposed to just haphazardly, like, you know, I go to drink beer every right. Thursday, Friday, Saturday night, because that's what everybody's doing. It's like,
I'm not a fan of alcohol at all. Have you ever done these compounds though without, and I agree with you about having like the reverence and going in kind of with like some sort of intentions. I agree with that. But have you ever done it without that intention? And is there a reason why you think that you should do it with intention? Because I know some people are under the impression that if you do it without intention, that maybe things will go awry or astray, or maybe, you know, bring out some more skeletons in the closet type of thing or whatever. I don't know about that. I'm so torn on the whole thing because I grew up doing all these things recreationally in my early or my late teens, early 20s. And then I stopped doing them a little bit and then I got back into them. But I don't know. I don't know what, because I do think that they should be allowed. I think everything should be allowed to be whatever it wants. So if it's recreational, I do think that these things should be allowed to be done recreationally because I've had some pretty fun experiences. I mean, I don't know how you would even govern that because we can't have everybody out there just doing crazy shit either. So I don't know. It's kind of a difficult topic, right?
I think there has to be some levity to it. I mean, it can't be the shadow work, deep crying session, come out crumpled mess on the ground every time. You know, like I said, I went on a year on the road exploring. So, you know, there are times I take a couple hits of DMT, let it, you know, kind of come down a little bit, and then go try to find the best ice cream place. You know, so that was my intention. I mean, it maybe not be some deep level intention.
Looking for that schnozberry, huh?
Yeah, you know, like, but, even like to smoke it to go for a walk in the woods because you want to hear insects and bird songs in a different way, or you want to see the spectrum of green color in a different way. You know, there's a lot of different ways of using it. And ultimately that's why, you know, Rick Strassman called it the spirit molecule because of just all of the kind of God and alien and other entity kind of stuff that came from his reports. I mentioned that I think it's a miracle molecule. One, because every time I did it, like that kept coming out was miracle, because there's so many different uses for it. Whether it be mental health, whether it be expanding consciousness, whether it be in the bedroom, whether, you know, to create art, to just push us to the next level. There's so much that I think this molecule can do.
And let me just expound on what I was saying. I don't mean go smoke DMT at the bowling alley or anything like that. I'm primarily actually more talking about things that are maybe like a psilocybin or, MDMA or something a little bit more social. I don't really consider, if I were to do DMT, I definitely wouldn't do it in, like you said, setting, loving, super private place where you're safe and you don't have to worry about anything. I think that that's obviously key, but yeah, somebody just commented DMTX, I'm down. I've never done it, but if they're like, hey, we need somebody that's never done it, I'd do it.
I've reached out to pretty much everybody that I think is involved in any part of those platforms and said I'll happily donate my brain and body. So if you have, whether it be Imperial College,
yeah,
whether it be up in Canada, anywhere.
Well, I know,
I'd love to get into that.
I know Daniel McQueen, who's been on the show, and Gallimore and all Strassman were all, part of the, consulting or whatever on it, with the whole idea of the intravenous drip, or the, the same way they administer anesthesia.
And I think their approach too is now, to take it to the next level. So yes, that there's cool sights and sounds and great psychedelic experiences. And in my case, it can help mental health and truly turn somebody suicidal to not be suicidal. I mean, those are amazing things that this molecule can do. But it's like, so what next? Like Andrew Gallimore always, well, not always, but he references as kind of like a technology. So like, and use it as such, and let's see where this can go, because whatever it's going to prove or disprove is going to be some major, major information. Like, so are there entities, are there gods and aliens that we're interacting with? Like, once again, your documentary, which would, you're trying to tie all these existential questions, where it's like, well, it's so weird once you're in that space, and it seems to confirm, like, yes, that there is certainly something greater than, that there's certainly something beyond what our normal senses pick up. And that, I think that needs to be explored. It seems like such a noble cause too. Like, what, definitely to look within as much as, without, but there's so much going on within, and it is some crazy, crazy stuff. And just what I've learned in a year and a half, and I say the few, the 100+ times that I've done it, and I can't wait to keep doing it more, because each level kind of builds and builds and builds. And not that I don't know if it's the same as doing these DMTX things, like, to stay in it for a half hour or an hour, but the amount of information that you can pull when you keep going in and out of these spaces is incredible. So I can only imagine with what trained mind could go into these spaces. So somebody that studies ancient symbols, and somebody that studies language, somebody that's trained in mathematics, that can look at geometry and understand what these things are saying. Like, it's just, it'd be cool to have a bunch of different mindsets go into these spaces and try to come up, and that's what they're doing, right? I mean, they're trying to quote unquote map these spaces.
Yeah, no, it's really wild stuff. I know, I think last time or maybe two times ago, we had Gallimore on, we were talking about, there's like an equivalent for that too with Salvia. It's like, Salvinorin B, methoxy, methyl, something, and it's like an extended salvia trip. It's like, who the fuck would sign up for that? That's like catapult. And I haven't done DMT, but I have done salvia, and it's a fucking blast into not great repeat world and like all sorts of weird shit. And I don't know if there's any, I don't want to say any, because I know that there's people that, there's a Hamilton's Pharmacopoeia episode where he goes down and he tries drinking the leaves of the salvia plant when he's in Mexico, and he doesn't have any experience at all. And then he like literally has nothing, like a whole ton of leaves too. And then he goes with the guy and they pick a bunch of leaves, and then they make quids the second time, and they chew them and they masticate them. I talked with Gailmore about that too, and he said that it's not that you're getting in. Hamilton said it was one of his favorite trips, by the way, too. And it wasn't the fact that he was getting more Salvinorin A or B through the mastication. It's that every time your receptors come in contact with it, it reignites the experience. So that's why quids are so potent in that way. But Yeah, I mean, I didn't. I should say I had two like fun experiences on it when I was younger, but I was like smoking like 32X or like whatever you could buy at the pipe store back then when it was still legal. And smoking it out of like a bong, and it was completely ridiculous stuff. And I don't
To put it
remember.
mildly.
Yeah, I don't recommend it. And that one you should be sitting down to, because I have friends like fall and trip over and all sorts of shit. So, but yeah. So I mean, with all of these things, I think that you just have to be careful and do your research. When we were younger, we would go to Urwid and just look at like all the trip reports, you know, all the plateaus. In your book, you talk about kind of like what to expect from like certain levels of things, which I actually like that too, because that's what we used to do. We'd go on Urwid and it would explain like, so if you take this dosage, this is what you'll feel. If you take this dosage, it'll take you to this next plateau where you'll feel this. And if you take enough, you'll get to this highest plateau, and this is where you'll be at, kind of a thing. And I think having that knowledge going into it will make you less scared or nervous of what, you know, to expect, kind of a thing.
Yeah, and I would say DMT is probably one of those where, one hit is so much different than two hits, is so much different than three hits, is so much different than four hits. I mean, one hit of DMT, can you microdose it? Kinda. I mean, if you take a small hit from a vape pen, you're not gonna have a full blown thing. And like I said, that using that like in the bedroom, so that's something where passing it back and forth, smaller hits, kind of prolong it. That's cool, but there is such a huge jump between that second and third hit, and then that third and fourth hit. And if you can push it to that fifth and sixth hit, it really just keeps jumping it to the next and the next level. It's way more than, you smoke one joint, and then you smoke in two joints, and then three. There's only so much high you can get. Where with DMT, it's like it doesn't seem to stop. Like you can just keep getting, not necessarily higher and higher, but deeper and deeper, I guess would be the
So that's
better.
what I was going to ask you. So there doesn't seem, from people I've talked to, doesn't seem to be like some sort of a tolerance, right?
No, but I had an experience which, and I'd like to kind of go over how my experiences have kind of changed and morphed, because it kind of ties in into your kind of
Absolutely.
alien
Yeah.
infatuation, so to speak, because it kind of maybe answers it. So yeah, from what I've read, there really isn't any tolerance build up, and every time you smoke it, you get this amazing whack. Well, maybe, I don't know, this was several months back, so I had already done it, I don't know, 50, 60 times maybe. So I had already written the book, right? So now I'm this psychonaut that's going into this space, and I'm not necessarily like demanding answers, but I feel like I pulled out all of this amazing information, and I'm getting all of this enlightened material, and it's wonderful. But I don't say I started getting cocky, but I was like, all right, I want the deep questions. I want to know literally, how did the universe start? How did the and kind of going in there like demanding some sort of answer. So like I said, my normal routine was come up, pray, meditate, come up with what I wanted to kind of get out of it. And one of the times that I like the I guess it kind of like they cut me off. Like I had this great experience full of visuals and sounds, but I came out of it and I was like, all right, like I want more than visuals and sounds. Like that's kind of like almost being, like I said, cocky. Like that's all you got is visuals and sounds. So the next like three times that I smoked, I don't want to say I didn't have any feelings at all, but there was nothing. Like it was almost like I wasn't allowed back. They were like, fuck you. And ultimately, once I realized that the sights and the sounds is the information, like you fool, like that is what you need to interpret. Like they're not going to speak to you in English, or they, or the information is not just going to be conveyed in a handwritten letter. Like it's going to be through these shapes
So
and
it's all
sounds.
symbolism.
Yeah, and I was kind of like hurt. Like I was embarrassed. Like I got kicked off the team. Kind of like, what were you, like you're like seriously not letting me in the space? Because like I said, I did it multiple times, and then I kind of said, in my opinion, like, I'm sorry, and kind of like, all right, I appreciated that it is about the sights and the sounds. And then ever since then, I haven't had that. I haven't had my privileges taken away again, I guess is the
You know
best way
what's
of saying
weird, dude, now that you're saying that? So I think
it.
it was probably like 6 years ago, I had like a 5 or 6 gram psilocybin experience, and this voice kept repeating, you know, all these different things. But then the one thing that it kept saying over and over and over again was that in the future, sound and light will heal everyone. That's what it just kept saying. And it's just like when I hear
it
sounds like cliche, but you know, there's been like a lot of other stuff that I've read since then that, you know, everything is frequency and vibration. So it makes sense. Like it doesn't, when you say that, you could interpret it as woo or whatever, if you stop there. But if you really, you know, analyze it, you know, what if the technology, yeah, what if they come out with something we don't even know about that does cure things or help things or fix things or whatever, you know what I'm saying? So, and they've got that Ajna light thing too, that supposedly, I think it's called Lucia light and Ajna light. They are these lights that you can put in front of your face that will simulate the DMT experience. It like somehow ignites the, have you ever, do you know what I'm talking about?
I've not heard of that.
Oh, no. Dude, you got to look into that. So there's these lights that you can, they have them at like float tank places too, I think, but they're these, it's called Lucia light, like Lucia light and Ajna, Ajna light. And it's supposed to simulate, like trigger the DMT visual experience. So I know people that have done DMT many times that say that does pretty incredible things. So
yeah, there's many ways of getting your body to flush that. Like I said, I'm not 100%, you know, is it DMT? Is it a combination of things? Is it blocking or is it filling? You know, I'm not sure, but.
Oh, I have no idea what's amazing, going on.
It's true. It's real. I mean, like, I feel I can like almost instantly induce goosebumps. I feel like I can, I don't know, like the control that you can have over your body once, you know, once you're aware of it. And maybe bring that back to you know, talking about Joe Dispenza, that reading his work really makes you realize that if you do have control over your body and your mind and your heart, that it does make all the other stresses go away.
What's the name of that book that you mentioned?
Becoming Supernatural.
Okay, yeah, I'll check that out. I'll add it to my thing.
Yeah, it's not.
There's some really wild people that I know that like swore by, but like some of those people are like full. You know, I've gone full off the reservation. So I just want to ask you, because you seem like you're pretty reasonably minded.
I don't need, for me, once you've seen like what I've seen and experienced what I've experienced.
No, I know, but I'm just saying, you like to hear from the science guys though sometimes too, you know.
I use him to convince people like my parents or my sister or you know, so it's not so much for the people that have been there and experienced, or I shouldn't say, I mean, it's helpful. But a lot of that's to the naysayers. That's like, oh no, that's just all in your head. No, it's not. Like, you know, if your body's stressed and run down, and you're, like I said, you're constantly in this stress state, you're going to produce all sorts of bad effects. If you're in a quality coherent state and you're loved and you're feeling love, your body's just going to be able to respond way better to any type of disease or anything bad happening. And once again, that's not just somebody saying like, oh yeah, get close to God and you'll feel good. Your body chemically changes when you're in that state.
No doubt. Yeah, I'll have to check that out for sure. I mean, you know, I like I said, I really recommend your book, just from like a perspective if you're not familiar with it. And again, you go over like how do you make it, or how, you know, like different things that like you wouldn't get. I guess you can find that on the internet and places, but they've heavily censor a lot of that stuff now too. So I know plenty of people that have been kicked off different platforms for trying to give out recipes and things like that. So,
well, that was kind of the field guide aspect too, where I try to consolidate all the information. So, you know, like you said, those recipes are out there. So the recipes are in my book, but were taken right from the internet. You know, that they're not like my own homemade type things. And that's kind of the beauty of DMT too, is it's so easy to extract and it's so inexpensive to extract, and it's simpler than brewing beer. It's simpler than making wine. It's simpler than growing weed. And what's going to, I'm, you know, I'm not, this is where you've got to be careful. Am I condoning breaking the law? No. But it's one of, like, you can buy it legally online. You know, the mimosa root that you can get is used for, to dye clothing. It's just this really like cool kind of purpley brown color. So you can
Well,
buy
that's
it
that.
legally and shipped into the
Yeah, that's
US.
the fun. I don't know if you've watched, ever seen Hamilton's Pharmacopoeia, but the one that he there's I think he's done a couple on DMT, but the one he did on like NN DMT, he goes down to like Chiapas, Mexico, and they're all chopping the vine,
Yeah,
and it's this
I've
red
seen that.
vine,
It's
and
awesome.
it they're using it for, and then he's like, and he can smell it in the air. He's like, I smell, it smells like DMT, you know, like the air down here because they're burning this wood. And he asked the guys that are chopping, he's like, do you know what this is used for? Like, no, you know, they don't know what the hell, you know, they have no idea what they're chopping. And then it gets sent to these places and then they sell it as like apothecary stuff or whatever.
Yeah,
But
make soaps and stuff.
yeah, you know, but then that's
It
the, in that
looks.
episode though, that guy, the one guy orders a bunch of, or I don't know, did he order acacia or did he order the other one, mimosa. I don't know, but he they arrested this dude, and it's in part of that same episode. They arrested this dude for ordering it from like some other country, and they charged him as if it was all pure DMT, but it was all mimosa hostel. It's like, that's fucking crazy. Like, that's like, imagine getting in trouble and they're like, oh, that's DMT. And there's literally only 2% DMT in that entire amount or whatever, you know.
It's crazy when you get it too. It looks just like mulch. So I mean, you can get it in powdered form, but you can get it shredded, or you can get it in like large chunks. But I mean, it looks just like cedar mulch and smells like cedar mulch. I mean, it's a very normal looking, like I don't know. If you just threw it out in the garden and mix it with the regular mulch, you wouldn't know. But that also leads you to like, how many other plants is it in, and how many, could you just get similar type plants and try to extract it and see what you get out of it? Like I'm in landscaping right now for kind of like a side gig, and it's like every time I'm spreading like hemlock mulch, I'm like, should I just try to do a batch with this? Like just run it through the process and see what happens. But
Dude, I'll tell you what is everywhere, and I'm sure you've come across it if you're in landscaping, is Datura, dude. That shit is everywhere. And
wow, what's
actually, if
that?
you can if you get the juice from the root on your hand, like if you're weeding or whatever, I think you can get reactions from that too. Dude, but Datura, I mean, Datura is a tropane. I'm not a fan of tropanes at all, but I mean, and in the ancient civilization world, tropanes was heavily used by the Greeks, the Romans, a lot of people. But yeah, Datura is all over, bro.
Is it in New England, do you know?
Yeah, it's
Stop
everywhere.
looking
It's
for
literally from
it.
coast it's literally from coast to coast.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's one of those ones where, and we've talked about this with Gallimore when he's been on, and he didn't like this, but I'll do it. I think that there is, he, you know, he was, I was trying, because like, supposedly, you know, like if you black out drinking or whatever, you have, or you have hallucinations drinking, there's probably stuff you're seeing that isn't there. Same thing with like tropanes, like you will see things that are not there. And does that mean that it doesn't have the same value as like a tryptamine, where you're still, well, a lot of it's based off of this reality, except for maybe DMT, where you kind of go into a different realm. But like psilocybin, you know, even on high doses, for the most part, everything's there. Maybe it's just moving, you know, stuff like that. So, I was hypothesizing that maybe some of like the gods or things that weren't actually there, maybe were a result of tropane use, as opposed to like a tryptamine use, if that makes sense.
Well, I guess it all, the big question is it coming from within your brain, or are you receiving information from without in some sort? And I guess that's the big question. But
Yeah.
I don't know if it really matters though. Like the experience
Right, right.
is still real and is still as profound. And but that's where I wanted to maybe like kind of get your take on your stories with like UFO and DMT, and once again kind of tying it together like you did with your documentary. Like with my experiences, so when I first started doing it, it was me experiencing, this world, this realm, and it was beautiful and wonderful, and I don't want to negate the incredible experiences that you have, but then it was me being explored. Like I would instead of me, like, you know, so you take a couple hits and then this whole new world opens up to you. It almost seemed like afterwards, once I was getting comfortable in that space, that I would pop into this and almost like I was on display. Like I was like a you know, an animal in a zoo or something like that. And it was just like, oh, he's back. He's back. Like, look at this, this guy that keeps coming into this space is back. And then when I, and that, that kind of been what was the theme for a while, where as soon as I went, I was being explored. And then I was shown to other entities. I was shown to younger entities, what I thought. But then I, then at one point, like I really felt like I was examined, or it was just, it was very invasive. It wasn't like, you know, painful. And I'm not saying it was like some alien abduction type thing, but once I had been in that space, I was welcomed in that space. I was interacting with these beings multiple times, but then it started getting into like, I'm being probed. I'm being looked at. Like they're doing something with me. And then that kind of morphed into, fuck, is this like my future self looking at me? It, like it wasn't some alien other than, it was just me, but from, I don't know, like future, another. So it's this weird whole,
let me ask you something. So you're having this experience. Does it feel like kind of like Truman Show-y? Because that is like a thing that other people have felt on other psychedelics as well. It's this idea that you're real and everything else around you is like a play or not real or something like that. Or was it more like you were a specimen, or maybe you popped into some other reality and these things were like, what the fuck is this thing? Or what is this guy or something like that?
I think it's more than like real or unreal or reality or not. I think it's more expanded consciousness and senses and not. So what we have, you know, our normal five senses and our normal state, it is nothing compared to what you have in this DMT state. So I think it's just, you have access to more information. So not only are your five senses completely expanded, like that guy, John Robinson was saying on your podcast, that I saw different colors, and it sounds very basic, but I said basically the same thing in my book, that I, you know, I saw colors that I've never seen
before. Yeah. I remember that.
I've heard things that you just, you're able to feel sound and hair colors and like taste. It's amazing how your normal senses get completely, like,
did you ever have upon, but then, the archetypal ringing, that sound, the archetypal like ringing, it's like a humming that lead, like before you go into full blast. A lot of people describe that.
It's awesome. So it's like a vibrational electric, really high pitched hum. You know, and that, like, you can seriously hear like the synapses firing in your brain. You can feel the blood flowing. It's like I said, everything is completely expanded upon. But then I guess, but so when you're talking to God, when you're having these interactions with entities or whatever, in my opinion, you're using different senses, you're not, and what they are, I don't know. Like, well, what do you call, what's the name that you put to it? I have no idea, but you're able to tap into just different vibrational energies, which carry different information. And so, you know, I guess that's where it's like, is it alien? Yeah, it's certainly not from our normal human on earth experiences. So, you know, I think people can apply these experiences to aliens, to God, to being, because I guess it's all of the above. It's you're experiencing something that you don't get to experience if you're not in that heightened state. You know, and that's where there's the whole like near death experience and the people that have like epileptic episodes and you know, people on this spectrum of perception that are able to have access to these heightened states or altered states. And I think that's the cool thing about the extended DMT is that these states are real. You know, it's not because I'm saying I'm experiencing more of these other people, like they're there. So what does that mean? Like humans really are just filtering out a large majority of the information. And yeah, I guess that's probably what DMT does, is it really, it removes that filter. So now you're able to just receive all sorts of shit.
I mean, sometimes I wonder too, like, are we just projecting onto this blank canvas that we call the world? And maybe that whole, maybe all the palaces and all the, you know, the mansions and the worlds and whatever, maybe all that's in our mind. Maybe our mind's more powerful. Maybe our mind is deeper in this endless, infinite thing. And maybe we're just thinking too much about the external. And I'm not taking that out of the question because I'm always open to anything. But again, from my own experiences, sometimes I think that there's nooks and crannies of our own minds that are so much deeper than the questions that face external reality that it could all be within us.
And the answer, and excuse me, the question is why, right? So, and I, the interviews that I hear with Andrew Gallimore all the time, he's kind of like saying, all right, so if it is just produced in our mind, right? If we're not receiving this information from outside, then why the hell is our mind able to produce these? Like there's no evolutionary advantage to having the types of visions you have in DMT. Like it just, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't. And because of that, well, you know, once again, why? Like what as humans, why do we have this ability to tap into this extra altered state of consciousness and very real? Like I get nervous every time and people ask me that all the time. Like, is it easy to smoke DMT? Do you ever get used to it? Is it like, does it ever become less scary? No, like every time it's completely, oh shit. And it's going to blow your mind because how do you process that information that you're getting? Like you're adding on this like super suit that has all of these extra things that are picking up all this extra information. And you know, it's hard to try to get what compartment in your brain you put that. Because what sense even is it? It's not smell, it's not sight, it's not sound. It's like you're absorbing information from fractal geometry that's penetrating your body at a cellular level. Like, oh, what the hell does that even mean? But it's real, and you come out with that information.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, no, it's yeah, man, there's so much weirdness. Looks like we got some comments. Thank you, Wildman Ninja, MPV. And George says, look into polysolipsism, not to be confused with solipsism as well as not to be. Yeah, no, I know what I mean. Solipsism is just the idea that we're the only thing that exists, or we're the only thing that we can verify is in existence. So I guess poly would be everybody is living their own version of reality, if I were to interpret that. So, yeah, I mean, in terms of these realms, though, like it's weird because there's things I've experienced that, you know, how like in a dream, you can say, OK, I've seen things. It's like a conglomeration of things I've already seen or whatever. It's like part of this house, but over in this area or things like that. I've had experiences in psychedelic realms where it's like, I've never seen that before. I don't even know what the fuck that is, you know? Yeah. So it's like, and I've also been told this is the realm of imagination and, you know, originality can be taken out of this realm if, you know, properly translated out of it or whatever, something along those lines. So, I don't know though. I still wonder, like, we're still these like biological androids in a way where we all repeat and it's all like an echo chamber and stuff like that. So like I'm always trying to figure out how can we truly be original if you're into art or you're an artist or just creative person in general. Like how can we break that causal line where we're instead of just being, you know, another bee in the hive, you know, we're actually doing something groundbreaking or new or something like that. So I don't know. That's what I've been focusing on lately with psychedelics and thinking and mind experiments and things like that.
You know, you bring up about like being an artist and, you know, somebody that hasn't done psychedelics, but has been in any type of flow state, like that's similar, you know? So we talk about like breathing and meditating, anybody that's been in an artistic flow, it's very similar. Like you're tapping into something else. Like something else is channeling information to you and you're kind of just responding to it. Now, once again, does that artistic flow state mean your brain is opening up a DMT channel or, you know, I don't know. Is it just your mind and your body are in a coherent state like this man is saying and you're just quiet and calm? I don't know. But, you know, it is a very distinct state, and it feels freaking great, you know, and it's like, why not continue to get there?
Absolutely. So would you mind sharing, do you have any experiences with any of the entities that you might want to share, like something crazy? Or I know you mentioned the one message that we talked about earlier, but is there anything, any crazy trip reports or anything you could think of that you might want to share?
I think so. Yeah, I guess a couple cool things. There is a sense of being like familiar in that you're welcome there. So I remember one time I was tripping on shrooms, and I went to go smoke, and as soon as I kind of broke through, I could hear whatever these entities being like, he's back, he's on shrooms, and he brought shrooms. And it was just kind of like this funny experience where, you know, I was kind of nervous about doing both shrooms and DMT, and it instantly made it very comfortable because they were kind of like joking around. And then, like I said, that one where somehow, some way, I communicated to me that what was probing me was me, but in a different reality, I guess. I mean, that was pretty mind blowing. I mean, how do you put that into perspective? But I really just think that as we sit here in normal, non-altered state humans, we are just, and because of survival, I mean, if we were able to process all of the vibrational information that was penetrating through us, I mean, we wouldn't be able to do anything. So I think it's a survival state, and it is that reducing valve, you know, kind of theory that we only let in basically kind of what we need. But if you can get beyond the needs of food, shelter, all of that, and get into that meditative quiet space, whether it be through, like I said, prayer, meditation, or through DMT, your brain is going to expand and be able to perceive different things. Those things that you perceive are like, they're real, however you define real. I mean, they're real to the people that experience them. And like, what does that mean? You know, like a good analogy is if you do believe in aliens, if you do believe in ghosts, so like, how do you just live your everyday life knowing that there's ghosts in the room with you, or that there's aliens potentially up above you? I mean, if you do believe in that, and I believe in both aliens and ghosts, like it drastically changes how you walk through your everyday life.
Yeah, but do you believe in alien ghosts?
I do. Well, because it's all semantics. I mean, it's all a matter of how you describe it. To me, it really is. It's something different than alien, than transcendental to our typical normal way of thinking. So however, you know, however you describe that, it is, I don't know, I think you're almost kind of describing kind of the same thing. Is some sort of intelligent being that knows how to communicate information that doesn't look like our particular, you know, biological body. Whether it's transparent like a ghost, or it's a little gray alien, it's, you know, it's altered somewhat, but it's, I don't know, it could very well be all this the same stuff, which is, once again, it's just, in my opinion, vibrational energy from a expanded realm consciousness. You know, I don't know, I guess that's where you start getting into physics and stuff if you start talking about different dimensions. But it's just altered state. Yeah. Altered and elevated state of consciousness allows you to tap into something way greater than normal walking state. And DMT blasts you there instantly. And that's all like, oh shit.
I mean,
never prepare for it.
I don't know. I think that with all this talk of all the stuff going on and aliens and UFOs, I mean, that's why we made that documentary. I think that the closest anybody could get to it is kind of what you're talking about, because it's alien. It's the definition of like alien, the experience, the realms, the entities, the whole thing. I mean, you know, people are looking for aliens. Well, why not start where we know people have experienced them, that anybody can, you know, get into this thing. So,
well, and maybe, then take it, you know, to
maybe everybody won't see that, you know, or maybe it's suggestive, and maybe it's something putting on a mask or something like that. I don't know, but I think that's where you start, in my opinion, is consciousness and altered consciousness and things of that nature.
And if we all have similar experiences, like that's kind of the cool thing is that it does seem to be a common thread. And it's more than just, oh, do you see gestures? Do you see this? You know, do you have the machine elves? Like, yeah, there's some common, you know, buzzwords that some people, you know, typically use. But when you dig deeper, like when you know, the real conversations about what you saw, how it affected you, the similarities are really profound. So, you know, maybe like once again, the similarities between the UFO stories and the similarities between these experiences, like something is clearly, you know, happening. And it's tough to describe. So when you try to describe something that's indescribable, you know, that's when you try to turn to ghost aliens, you know.
Well, I mean, yeah. And in the same vein, it like, so if the documentary, you know, in the same vein of like, let's see here, True Hallucinations, which I definitely took inspiration from, Terrence McKenna, you know, going into the Colombian jungle with his brother Dennis and experiment at La Charrera and trying to tap into the same frequency as the mushroom, you know, like all this crazy shit, you know, and then the whole UFO thing intertwined into that. It was definitely inspiration because I have already felt those things too through my own weird psychedelic UFO experiences. So the idea that when people have these UFO experiences, it almost seems like an altered state, the way that they describe it. There's a loss of time. There's all this stuff happening.
When I hear people describe a UFO experience, it's almost exact a DMT experience. Like, I mean, I could change a couple words and it would be my experience.
So I mean, my thought is, if we have DMT, we produce it in our bodies, it's part of nature, maybe that's what this thing's using to communicate with us, because it's like, oh, we're picking up the signature. I mean, it could be anything, carbons, you know, it could be anything, I guess. So that's not a great example. But just the idea that maybe that's the thing that animates us or is the key component of our consciousness, and that's what this thing's trying to tap into or something along those lines.
Yeah. Well, I think that's why they started, I say that, it's so weird to say it like that. That's why they started probing me, because I think it was like, I started getting very used to having, you know, whatever this chemical in me that allowed me to receive their information. And it was, you know, once again, it was kind of like, who the hell is this human that keeps coming into this space, like demanding answers. But now I feel like I'm like I said, I'm welcomed again. So it's always a hell of a run.
No, dude. And you're you know, I know you said you were kind of hesitant about like engaging with people. I think you just jump right in, dude. You're a super chill dude. It seems like you really understand, you know, the spiritual / ethical / philosophical components of this thing. You know, I don't know. You're welcome on the show anytime. So,
well, you know, to maybe end this and my book, which is not how I really thought I'd be ending it. Once again, talking to a grown man, and let's talk about love and you know, how we can hug each other. The last chapter of my book is called Love Thy Neighbor. And it's just, it seems like a very odd chapter for me to end my book with, because I went into the desert to kill myself, in essence, because I hated humanity, because I was just done with people. And because I was sick of people that were deceitful and dishonest. And like I said, I having complete change of view of myself and finding my own self-love and my own self-worth, it opened me up to letting other people in. And I can honestly say that I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for the love of other people. And I guess that's really the message, is to be there for one another, to truly love thy neighbor, because you don't know when you'll need that love. Like, you don't know when you'll need a hug or lean a shoulder or a shoulder to lean on. And psychedelics, I think, allow that conversation to happen. Like, if this book, even, and that's ultimately the goal, it's not necessarily to give somebody a DMT recipe or to, you know, have some fancy book about DMT. It really is realize that there's help. Like, if you're in a dark place, that there's light, that it does come from within. You know, it's not going to be some external source. And I don't know, you know, we're all in this together. But that being said, you got to be open to love and to open that type of vibration. And for so long in my life, I was closed out, and now never again. And once again, I want that contentment. It's talk about a drug. Like, that, to have to be full of gratitude, to be full of contentment, to genuinely wake up and to be excited to live each day, as opposed to be stressed, anxious, depressed. That's the real win.
No, that sounds awesome, man. It's like I said, it seems like you really, you know, you've really gained what you should be out of these things. I mean, I don't want to say it's just knowledge, because I don't think it's just knowledge. I don't want to say it's just, you know, moral insights. I think it's a combination of a little bit of everything. But it sounds like, you know, you said you're very new to all this or whatever. You have some exposure to these things. I think you're way more wise with these things than a lot of the people I talk to, like I said, that are just idiots online or whatever. So I appreciate what you're doing. I appreciate the field guide. No doubt I'm going to take a couple things I picked up off that. So if I ever do come across that spirit molecule, I'll have that knowledge in the pocket, as well as the knowledge of a lot of people that have been on the show, and people in the comments section, even our listeners tonight, MPV, Wildman Ninja, George, they've been throwing some truth bombs in the comments as well. So shout out to them. And yeah, man, you're welcome on the show anytime. We'll definitely have to have you back on and get into some stuff. And you're welcome when you come to Michigan too. If and when that ever happens, let me know, dude. We'll connect.
I'm always looking to take a road trip. So
right on, bro.
And I do. I send you a PDF copy of my book. Honestly, feel free to share or spread that to anybody. You know, obviously, I'd like to sell a couple books and make some bucks, but that's really not what this is about.
We're sending people. I'm not sharing anything for free. People can.
I'm just saying, if it resonates with the right people, I want the message to get out there.
No, I will. If I feel like somebody's like in a bad place and just needs, yeah, totally. But for everybody else that pays for books, that's listening to this, the book, the link's down below. It's on Amazon. Check it out. It's not. I think it was like 100 pages, so it's not super long, but he gets to the point. He's not, you know, doing a bunch of word salad either. It's just very succinct and to the point. So check it out. And, you know, like I said, he shared a lot of his story tonight, but there's so much more to it. And again, dude, I really appreciate you coming on. Check out his book. Links down below. Butler's DMT Field Guide. And I will play the trailer to our documentary as we get out of here. Let's see here. I will give a couple shout outs and plugs. Again, the best way to support Mind Escape is just to click the Linktree link down below. This is a passion project, but hopefully at some point in the future, it can be, you know, a full-time project. You know, I would love that. And we can always get more guests, more episodes, stuff like that kicking. So, click the Linktree down. Leave us a nice review. We've got Apple, Spotify, they've got reviews on there. You can leave us a nice review. If you're listening on one of those, please check us out on YouTube. We do all of our shows live on YouTube. Subscribe, like our videos. And if you're watching on YouTube, please check us out on Spotify. We do have videos on there as well as Apple Podcasts. So check that out. And I'm just trying to think. We have a merch store. We have a Patreon. We do have a director's cut version of As Within, So Without, from UFOs to DMT on our Patreon. You can check that out, as well as all the other exclusive content. And I think that's about it. I'm going to give one more shout out to the sick glass, heady glass artists out there. Glass by Aaron Carty. Aaron's amazing. I don't know if I showed him. You can go to our Instagram page and check him out, but she made me a couple really heady dropper bottles with some dead bears and some other stuff, little mushrooms on them and stuff. So go check out her Glass by Aaron Carty on Etsy, Sales Jody, SayleSJodi. She's making heady marbles, gross glass, gross glass, Jappy glass. I'm a huge fan of his Chillums, Jappe glass on Etsy. And my boy Blake Mazie, we are brothers from different mothers. We do have the same last name, Oakwood Hot Works on Etsy. And let's see here, a huge shout out to Marley Machine Works. This dude, and I'll take a picture and show it next time, but this dude made me a few Detroit Red Wings themed titanium dabbers. unbelievable. Marley Machine Works. Andrew Tischler Glass. Shout out to Andrew. I just got my Heady Marble cap for my slurper rig from him. Again, posting these pictures up on our Instagram if you want to check this stuff out. And a big shout out to this dude, the Dream Lamp, all about that molecule, Heady Glass. So check that out, the Dream Lamp on Instagram. So again, just trying to highlight people, I think, that are doing cool art, cool work, original stuff. People, maybe some of these people need a little bit of a break. So, you know, support your local artists and your Heady artists and people that are really in the game, you know, so. But that's it. That's all I wanted to say. I'm going to play the trailer for our documentary. Thank you so much to Adam. You are welcome on the show anytime. Check out Butler's DMT Field Guide. Link down below. We love everybody. Stay safe out there, and we will catch you next time. Peace.
I don't have to believe. Something's here. There's no question about that.
They are not just from this planet, but based on the characteristics they're most often described having, that they're simply us from the future.
It was the biggest aircraft I've ever seen in my entire life. It was semi-translucent, it seemed.
We see four orange orbs flying one after another, basically in formation.
I think in a way, you know, you could call a UFO a flying dream.
Out of the cornfield, that 7 foot tall, gray, menacing, communion looking alien, or whatever you want to call it.
Because it can be a multitude of things, of deities, of godlike creatures, of aliens.
The reality that we experience on a day-to-day basis seems to be this very, very thin slice of something far larger and far more complex.
As within, so without. From UFOs to DMT.